Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, the championship looks like it might actually be over pretty soon, which we didn't expect a few rounds ago.
Yeah, I think it looked like was gonna be over. But after the last race, after what Joan Mir did last race, I think, we are really close to find out who's going to be the new champion.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy season. And Joan Mir not having won a race has been one of the sort of crazier elements of it, I think, because, of course, he's been so strong since those August races in Austria. He's been so strong, but the win never came. But in Valencia, it did, and it was in brilliant, brilliant fashion. I mean, it was just such a tidy ride. You know, it was awesome from Joan Mir. A champion's ride, I think, is fair to say.
Yeah, I think was, again, he normally says what he needs to say, and last weekend he did what he needed to do. And just, I mean, he did it, that win. It was not easy. I mean, he was waiting quite a lot for that win to happen, but it happened in the best possible moment. Because the pressure was on him, and he did show that pressure is not a problem for him. And he did an amazing job and an outstanding performance on Sunday, because Rins made a mistake, which is not the first one on this kind of mistakes. And then Joan took profit of it brilliantly, I would say, with any single mistake. So, yeah, chapeau for him.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the fact that the Rins made that mistake and that was how Joan won. When Joan got in front, he then upped his pace straight away down into the 1 minute 39s and the gap 2 or 3 tenths quicker every lap. And that was what really impressed me. It wasn't just the fact that he was able to be close enough to Rins to make that move. It was the fact that once he got clear, he showed that he could stretch away. And yeah, like you say, brilliant, brilliant ride.
I remember, I think it was Alberto Puig on Sunday morning saying, listen, or maybe Saturday, one of two main candidates for the title fight are Fabio and Joan. And the one who wants the most to be the champion at some point will have to attack. So, and we had the answer like 2 or 3 hours after that quote. So yeah, and I think that this win will take a lot of pressure off Joan. So now we will probably, okay, I mean, not now because he still needs to get the title, but I think that we will see a more relaxed Mir in the next two rounds. Let's see.
Yeah, I think what will help is that he's going to go into the next round this week and not having people ask him, oh, you know, do you want to win a race? Does the championship count if you've won it? He's,
to be honest.
And I think that'll help.
Yeah, to be honest, when we, the journalists, ask him about it, he was pretty relaxed. I mean, I don't know why, but he has this calm when he speaks. And I don't know why, but I believe him, you know? I believe what he says. I don't know why. He has this, I don't know if in English is charisma or... And you believe what he says, because in some other riders, you can feel that they are, I would say, acting or, you know? In his case, I don't know why, but I believe him.
Yeah, he's very trusting, you know, you never, I know what you mean, because you speak to Joan and he's what, 23 years old? He's 2 years younger than me, 1 year younger than me, and he's just so level-headed, so mature, as if he's been racing for 30, 40 years, not you know, 5 years in the World Championship. He's just so calm. And what he said this weekend sort of summed up Juan as a character for me was when people were asking about the pressure. And he was like, look, I'm a MotoGP rider. I don't have any pressure. The real pressure is people right now who can't pay the rent, can't put food on the table. That for me was just so indicative of Juan, but it's also, I think, a little bit indicative of this new generation of MotoGP rider, really yes. level-headed, nice yes. guy.
But that's what I mean. At the same time, depending on who says this, you say, oh, he doesn't really believe so. That, yeah. But it's the right, the polite thing to say. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. ones we have politically correct people, and then it's the perfect thing to say nowadays is this. But if it's Mir who's speaking about it and says this, I don't know why, but I believe him. Maybe it's only me, but I think he's very truthful guy, you know? And mm-hmm. if he says that, I don't know why, but I get it. Okay, I buy this answer.
Yeah, there's a couple of riders on the grid like that. Another one's Franco. Frankie's really like that. You can sort of, yeah. when he says something, you 100%. Get it. And Cal, and I think Cal as well, but I think more because Cal's brutally honest rather than he's kind of quite laid back. Cal just sort of says what it is, but it's good for us because we're not having to sort of fight through a barrier. We can ask a question and we get the response that we need, that we want, that allows us to develop a story and to develop these characters as well, because it's our job to portray these guys to the public. Mm-hmm. So we need them to work with us as much as we work with them.
Yeah, it's really good to listen to these guys. Dobby is another one being, very, you know, truthful when he says, I mean, he is very, let's say, his speech normally are very well set, very well, you know, his arguments are really easy to trust on.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think as well, it's a very popular result, Joan Mir's victory, because he's, like you say, such a nice guy, such a trusting, honest guy.
It's very difficult to find a bad word from anybody about Joan, which is pretty remarkable during these days.
Well, yeah, if you think back to his Moto3 and Moto2 days, there was never any, I don't ever remember him getting involved in any incidents, really getting too aggressive with people, getting upset in people or having bad words to say about anyone else.
Even off track, I mean, it's very difficult to find him saying stupid things or, you know, silly comments on anybody. No, he's just... I don't know, I would say right. He's always polite, he's always respectful, and mm-hmm. it's good to have a rider like him.
He's the kind of rider that I remember speaking to Hervé Poncharal earlier in the season, and this is the kind of rider that he likes, because this is what he's like. He likes polite people.
I think not only Hervé likes him.
Yeah. But you know, I listened to Hervé and I like what he said about it, but I kind of think, well, this paddock's a bit strange for that, because it's, you know, sport is full of egos, but it seems to be more and more we are finding these nice, level-headed characters, just generally nice people. I mean, even Mark, you know, he's the world champion, but Mark's a lovely guy.
Yeah,
you even know, Fabio's a nice guy.
We have Miguel as well.
Yeah. And I think even... sometimes when he speaks to the press, he used to be a little bit snappy, but I think even Maverick as well is when you speak to Maverick, he's quite polite and he's...
Well, but this is, I mean, he's a bit, what do you say, snappy, but I think it's just because Yamaha drives him crazy.
And I think with just some justification, I was thinking about this earlier because I remember the start of this year, I remember Maverick talking about how he'd worked on himself, he worked on his mind, he worked to try and be more calm, to approach a situation better. He's improved himself and Yamaha hasn't improved. And I feel sorry for Maverick because he's doing everything he can, but Yamaha isn't. Anyway, we'll talk about Yamaha in a minute because it's a big big bloody story to get into this weekend. But just to finish on Juan, in fact, finish on Suzuki, because we can't discredit Alex Rins's ride in that race. Yes, he finished second, but it seems to me people are surprised that Alex Rins is a good rider. But when you watched him in that race, apart from that one mistake, he rode really well. He rides the Suzuki really well. And from what he's done since getting injured, it's been a good campaign for Rins.
So, I think Rins has an outstanding talent riding a bike. He's been like this since he was 6-7 years old. I remember first time I heard about him, I was in Castelloli in Parc Motor, which is a track like an hour far from Barcelona, and it was Randy Mamola talking to me about him, because I think at that point Dakota was racing, his son Dakota Mamola was racing with Rins, and he told me, listen, there's this guy, this little kid, Alex Rins, which is amazing, and I think you can see his talent riding this bike, riding the Suzuki. I think he is the one riding the Suzuki more naturally. I mean, he has the perfect riding style for this bike. And I think he's only missing this kind of details at some stages of the races. We've seen this, let's say, lack of concentration or focus at some specific points. Last Sunday, he made a mistake with a gear. And then in MotoGP, if this happens when you are leading the group, you are exposed. And then if you have Joan Mir behind, considering that he was looking for this first win, he's taking the chance, so no way. So, but yeah, he's, to me, is one of the most talented guys on the grid. Definitely, I would say one of the most talented guys. Maybe I would put him in top five.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. And I mean, had it not been for his injury at Jerez, you'd probably have said when Marquez was out, you probably would have thought, all right, you know, the two guys you would have pinpointed to take Mark's place would have been Fabio and would have been Alex. It so happened that Alex was injured, and that injury affected him for a long time. So you have to think that 37-point gap would maybe be a bit smaller than it is right now had the season gone a bit better. But that's all ifs and buts. And
yeah, because in the end, I mean, Mir crashed race one, then...
Yeah, race three as well.
Race three, and he should have won in Styria. So
it's all much of a muchness in the end. But what it does highlight, I think, is the supreme job that Suzuki, that Davide Brivio, that Ken Koachi, everyone in that operation has done since 2015 when they came back. Sylvain Guintoli as well, and Tom O'Kane especially, they deserve a big credit as well. The whole operation has done a fantastic job, considering they don't have a satellite team. They have generally a smaller budget than a lot of the other, you know, Honda, Yamaha, certainly Ducati as well, I'd have thought. Everything they've done has been brilliant over the past fight. Yes, there's been some missteps, like with Andrea Iannone in the engine, but they recovered, they banked on youth, they got the team together, and now they're leading all three championships. They got their first 1-2 since 1982. Full credit goes to Suzuki, to Davide Brook, to all of those guys.
100%. I mean, well, I cannot say anything else. I mean, yeah, they've been working flat out. I mean, don't forget that Marc Márquez is not there. I mean, we have to have it clear. And that's another story that we have clear. This is why MotoGP is so different than Formula One. The impact of the rider in the question is much bigger than the impact of the rider. Of the driver in the question. Yeah. So that's why I would love to see what would have happened if Mark was here. So, but in the end, full credit to them. I think they will be, if they are, which I think, yeah, they will, they have everything on their favor, I think they are fully, deserved.
Yeah, it was quite poignant that they got that first one too at Valencia, at the scene of the first race where they came back, where they blew through three engines. They didn't finish that race with Randy Depuny, I don't think. So it's nice that it's sort of that's where it started, and where it looks like the championship will end for them is in Valencia with Joan Mir this weekend winning. It's a nice story.
There was no Suzuki winning a race in Valencia since Sete Gibernau in 2001.
Yeah. Which is a completely different era.
I mean,
it's incredible, and it's nice as well. I remember at the end of that race, it was nice to see that the MotoGP had hooked a heart rate monitor onto Davide Brivio when he watched that race. But what I thought was really nice was that there was, again, all the comments after that race were about how nice it is to work for Suzuki, you know, how good that team is. And I think that's so rare in MotoGP, especially when you consider what's happening with other manufacturers right now. To have that proper team atmosphere to be projected to the world is so nice.
I think they are living a dream now, and they are enjoying that dream. They are a small team with much smaller budget than the big manufacturers, and they are just getting the most of it, which is the best possible feeling in this world at the moment. So they are more efficient than anybody else, and maybe because of that, because it's much more easy to find the balance when you don't have a huge structure with so many departments, with so many different companies involved. So I think they have found the right way to work and to be very, very efficient.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Let's talk about another Japanese manufacturer that efficiency is maybe not its key strength. Yamaha. I mean, I think we need to start at the start of the weekend, because of course we got the news that Yamaha fielded illegal engines at the start of the season at the Spanish Grand Prix. All eight engines that they had prepared for that race were fitted with non-homologated valves, which they claimed is an internal oversight. But how can a manufacturer as big as Yamaha honestly not understand the regulations?
Well, I think that there was a gray area on that. I think they admitted that they misunderstood the regulation, but at the same time they want to make clear that there was no bad faith. Is it called bad faith? On that matter. We know that because we follow all the story through the season, and all the other manufacturers were it's funny to see how the other manufacturers have been reacting through the season to this matter in particular, because they have changed the approach and let's say legal actions depending on which stage of the year. And for example, I know that Ducati didn't want for Yamaha to lose the rider's point, which is a bit surprising considering that they would have been much better positioned at the moment. And but you know, politics, I mean, we are getting into that kind of conversation, and it is a very uncomfortable because we all believe that MotoGP is very, very, very far from Formula One, but we are getting closer.
I remember on social media, on a couple of our stories, there was people going, they should call Ferrari, there's a Ferrari. But I think that's a bit unfair, because Ferrari were looking for performance and Yamaha, well, they didn't find any performance. What they got was an engine that was, first of all, Yamaha, they insist they didn't cheat, and we take them at their word because, like you say, it was a gray area they fell into. But at the same point, they maybe could have looked for more clarification, but that's splitting hairs at that point. The valves they used were of the same design and specification, but they couldn't prove that they weren't because the materials were a little bit different. And of course, once you homologate something, you have to run that. So this is the problem. They weren't, there wasn't a performance. They weren't trying to cheat as such. They,
at the same time, so I would make clear that that's what they say.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Which is fine for me. I mean, and when we write that, we write the version, but at the same time, let's say, well, it, they change because at some point they say, listen, there is no any difference at all between both manufacturers. But in the other side, they say, well, there were marginal differences. So what do you mean? If there are marginal differences, they are not the same. If the treatment that you give to the bulbs is different, they are not the same bulb, because the performance of the bulb, the durability of the bulb, the reliability of the bulb is not the same. So I think that's something that we have to point at.
Yeah, and this is where Yamaha came into the reliability problems, was because the treatment of the valves was different to their process, the engines broke. So the, and it was when they asked for to the Manufacturers Association to clarify, to if they could open the engines to replace the valves, that's when everything started, because everyone was like, ah, you have two valves, that's not correct. So this is the situation. But aside from the fact that it didn't, they lost constructors points, which doesn't really mean anything in MotoGP, really. It's not like Formula One where the constructors championship is super big. It's the fact is that Yamaha lost two engines from their allocation because of a mistake. So for Quartararo, Morbidelli and Rossi, they had three for the rest of the season from the second Jerez race onwards. Maverick only had two because he lost one during the Spanish Grand Prix weekend. So from that already, the engines were not fast to begin with. They were unreliable. They had to take revs off them to keep the reliability and to make them go the distance. And Maverick paid for that at Valencia with the pit lane start. I did some calculations, and Morbidelli's race engine, his preferred one right now, is on about 1,200 miles. So it's he's facing a pit lane start, really. Quartararo's done about 700 miles on his preferred race engine, so he might just about get away with it. But the fact is, Yamaha had already set themselves up to fail by this, by building a bad engine to begin with, but then making this mistake. So it almost seems, it's almost to me as if Yamaha were always doomed to fail in this championship, because...
Well, yeah, but they only admitted it now.
Yeah.
Because we've been asking them, and they were very relaxed. They are looking at us like, what are you talking about? I mean, no, we are pretty relaxed. I mean, the engine is really fast, really strong. And we are very happy. And now what Rossi on Maverick says is that the engine is slow and it breaks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the first red flag for us, I think, for the media came on Thursday when Maverick said, well, in Aragon, I had to limit my mileage and I'm going to have to do the same for Valencia because I just don't have any more. And then that's when everything started to spiral. And like you say, they were critical of the mistakes. Maverick on Saturday said Yamaha were just throwing away the championship every year by mistakes, which is, that's pretty brutal, considering as well that this is a guy that signed up for two more years. He's put his faith in Yamaha when other manufacturers were looking at him. I think you can understand why there's this disconnect. And I think it's beginning to be the same with Fabio, because he said on Sunday, which something I thought was really interesting, he said in Aragon, this front tire pressure, there was a bit of an argument with Yamaha that he wanted to run a lower pressure, but the Yamaha protocol said no. So it seems to me that this, there's a lot of friction there between the riders and Yamaha, and it's been there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I asked Maverick, I think it was on Saturday, it looks like Yamaha drives their riders crazy, because at the beginning was only you, but now when you hear, when you listen to Fabio's comments, he's starting to be to get in this maverick way of, I don't know, we have something, we have a lot of things to change. I don't know what's going on. They don't give me any precise explanation about what's happening. So, yeah, I think they have to react and they have to do something and they have to change some part, because it's been quite a lot of time that we've been hearing this. And if you listen to Honda or you listen to Ducati, you know that where they are working on, you know that they have an idea. Then maybe they can fix the problems or they can't. But with Yamaha, it looks like they don't even know what's going on with the bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is something Rossi said on Sunday. He said, look, you know, it's the bike at the start of the year, we feel ready, and then but the others bring more stuff to the bike in the pre-season. So that after the few rounds, we stay the same and the other manufacturers are better. And if you look at the results this year, look at the most inconsistent manufacturer. It's been Yamaha. One weekend they win a race, the next weekend they're not even there.
Yeah.
So it seemed, yes, the engine's a problem. And Rossi said that the rideability of the engine's a problem and everything's a consequence of that. But it just seems that the bike in general is, it doesn't have a good base setting, unlike the Suzuki, which you can just put on the track and the Suzuki more often than not is quick. And you can, so if you look at some of the, well, like we were critical of some of Maverick's performances this year where he was quick and then not so quick, but you can sort of understand a little bit why now, because everything on this Yamaha is, it's, how do I put it? It works against it. The engine works against the chassis. The chassis isn't as good as it was last year, but it works, doesn't work with the engine as well. It's, everything's a consequence of everything. And how can they fix that for next year? They can't change the engine.
Well, yeah, but Rossi say that there's no excuse about that. I mean, that this can be
an excuse
because you can work around the pieces, many different pieces around the engine, so you can try to fix these kind of problems. Let's see. But in the end, I'm starting, I mean, the feeling that I have with Yamaha is the opposite than the one I have with Mir, you know? I always trust on what Mir says, and it's getting difficult for me to trust on what Yamaha says.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But the problem is, if you look at Rossi's right, there's more things to do. But look at they tried a new exhaust, they tried new electronics, and they ditched them after Misano. They did the same last year, and they got rid of them again. So whatever Yamaha's doing, it isn't working. And I wonder if this is. I wonder two things. Is this because they haven't tested so much this year because they didn't have a proper test team in place because it was stuck in Japan, whereas everyone had a European test team? And also, does this prove that the current Yamaha structure doesn't work and they need another change, which of course they had a change just a few years ago? There's a lot not working, and you have to say the part that is working is the riders. They're doing the best they can. The rest of it is the problem. It's not the riders, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, to be honest, because it's been a long time with those kind of problems. And I don't know. Maybe it's difficult because I don't really understand how the Japanese people or the Japanese, let's say, decision makers decided to keep going this way. I think at some point they will have to take a decision and to change direction, because it's a fact that there's something that they need to fix, and yeah, let's see what happens next year. But because we all know that Valentino Rossi is not going to be there, and I think that this may have an impact on this structure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think as well Yamaha would do well to have a look at its Japanese rival Suzuki and see what's working there and try and replicate that. But I suppose the only good thing for Yamaha this weekend was Garrett Gerloff, because he was quite good on the bike. Unfortunately didn't race, but let's talk about Andrea Dovizioso, because you broke a story just before we started recording this podcast that he will be taking a sabbatical in 2021. He will not be a test rider. Well, that's a bit of a surprise, to be honest.
Yeah, I think It is a surprise because he was really close to find, well, to it was all set with Yamaha. It was all set. It was all the negotiations done. But it looks like in the last minute he rethinks and he changed his mind. So I think that his main target is to get ready and to train and to race and to participate in a few or in a lot of motocross races, which is his real passion, to get fit, to just to breathe, to clear his mind, because his mind this year is full of, let's say, bad energies after what happened this year with Ducati, and then try to come back. And I say try because it's not going to be easy to find a place in 2022.
This is a risk because he's going to be 36 years old in 2022. And as we've seen in the current NUK contracts, manufacturers are banking on youth now, you know. But it should be mentioned that in 2022, there's going to be new agreements with the teams in Dorna and with the manufacturers. So there's talks of perhaps a Suzuki satellite team, maybe Aprilia. Suzuki would really, really benefit from having someone like Dovi on a satellite bike, perhaps.
I'm not 100% sure this is going to happen, but let's see if they get the title. Let's see what happens in 2022. But I'm not really sure about what Suzuki will do regarding the satellite team in 2022, because speaking with the management, they are not fully convinced about the let's say the Japanese company. I mean, the decision makers will go ahead with the fundings and finding the budget with that this kind of project requires. So let's see. But anyway, we agreed, and it won't be easy for Dovi to find a spot and to find a competitive bike which suits his demandings in terms of technical side, in the technical side, and of course in the terms of earnings and this kind of things.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that one thing that might work in Dovi's favor is if we look at the guys in Moto2 next year, there's not really that many front runners that are likely to get a shot in 2022. Maybe Bezzecchi if he has a good season, but it's hard to see someone like Sam Lowe's coming back up. And then, of course, you've got a lot of rookie guys like Arenas who need time. So maybe Dovi might get a chance in that respect. But there also might be the problem that after, we mentioned it just a few minutes ago, Gerloff was quite impressive on the bike, on the Yamaha in practice. And teams might start to look more at young World Superbike riders, young fast World Superbike riders, and give them a chance. So there's a lot of things there that kind of work against Dovi.
The thing is that this decision, the main question mark is Dovi going to lose his status? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially next year if Mark comes back and is quick again. But then you've got a reigning champion in Joan Mir. So if Mir can challenge Mark, if Alex Rins can challenge Mark, we don't know what Alex Marquez is going to be like. He could be super strong. You have to think if the Yamaha is okay, Fabio Maverick will be there. So yeah, it's not as if you know, Mark's going to get an easier time because Dovi's not there. So yeah, I agree with that. His standing might not really be as it was. It's an interesting one. I think it's a bad decision personally. He needs to be on a MotoGP bike, and Yamaha would really, really have benefited from having Dovi on that bike. Really, really benefited. I don't know.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm not the one judging this kind of decision, but I think it's a risky one. But I think it comes from misjudgment of the situation and on misjudgment from him and from it was, to me, it was misjudgment of the market and how the market was evolving at the beginning of the season, how fast the market was moving. And yeah, in the end, it's crazy that Dovi won't be on the grid next year. Okay, he's taking a sabbatical year, but he's forced to take that decision. So that's why.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be a shame to lose Dovi, but the main thing is, if is like you say, he goes and clears his mind. He needs to be happy. And if motocross makes him happy, then...
we're all happy.
That's the main thing, because... yeah, exactly. For sure. I think on that note, Yuri, we will wrap up there. Thank you very much for staying up late over there in Australia and recording the podcast through many technical difficulties of our own.
Yeah.
With connections and such. I appreciate your company, and we appreciate the listeners too. If you like what you heard, go listen to our other podcasts on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and make sure you read everything from the European Grand Prix on autosportmotorsport.com. I have to say, that's probably the most I've ever written in a race weekend, so there's a lot to check out. And we will be back next week to perhaps discuss a world champion being crowned. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.